Today on The Grave Talks, the Whitney. Originally a home and hotspot of entertainment for the social elites of Detroit, the Whitney restaurant has seen countless souls come through its doors. Once its residents had passed, the property would transition into a medical care facility. Eventually, in the mid-1980s, the Whitney opened its doors to the public as a restaurant. Since that time, stories of its past residents and patients have risen to the surface. Ghost hunters and those curious about making a connection with the dead have made the Whitney a choice destination to achieve this goal. The Whitney rarely lets anyone down. Today on The Grave Talks, we talk with paranormal investigator Mark Ortiz about the ghosts of the Whitney restaurant.
David Whitney, he was actually a lumber baron out of the East Coast, Watertown, Massachusetts. He was a big lumber guy out there. He actually moved to the Detroit area about the age of 27. He started the biggest lumber business in the U.S. His business ran from the East Coast into Canada, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, and then he actually started just to focus focuses his footprint in Michigan. The house that he built, the Whitney Mansion, I don't know if you've seen any pictures online. It's a beautiful historic mansion. At the time, he spent about $400,000 on this mansion, which in today's dollars is about $9.5-10 million. So the guy was very, very wealthy. Had a lot of money. One of the wealthiest people in Michigan, in Detroit. Built a mansion. Took him 4 years to build in 1890. Finished in 1894. Had a wife. He actually married sisters. The first wife that he married was Flora in 1860, and she actually didn't even get a chance to even live in the house. They had three kids, a son and three daughters. She passed in 1882, so she didn't get a chance to even step inside this mansion. Some say the ghost of the Whitney is Flora that's hanging around because she never got a chance to actually live there. So yeah, and he ended up marrying his sister. I think what her name. Her name was I can't think of her name at the top of my head. But they never had kids, and actually back then, it was more of a marriage of convenience to take care of the family. So they actually lived in separate bedrooms. So they never really they never had any kids together. And she ended up living in the house well after he passed away. He only been in the house for about 6 years, and she passed in 1970. The house it had 52 rooms, about 22,000 square feet, 10 bedrooms, 20 fireplaces, a lot of stained glass Tiffany out of New York. And it was actually the first residential home to actually have a working elevator. So kind of impressive for a guy back then to actually have an elevator in his home. So, of course, the elevator is haunted. I'm sure you're going to want to hear a lot of the haunted history of the Whitney. I myself actually am a paranormal investigator. So we are the Haunt Investigators of Michigan, which we do all the paranormal events at the Whitney. I know some history about the house, but I'm more on the paranormal side. But what I'm giving you is the information that throughout the years that we've been there, that we've heard from the staff there at the Whitney Mansion. But then again, you can Google all this information too.
Sure.
So,
the residential home for them after they had both passed, what happened to the property after at that point?
Well, from about after the second wife passed. It was actually because the family was really, I don't want to say they were in the medical business, but they actually, they allowed, I think it was like from 1917, they actually allowed the Wayne County Medical Society to actually move into the resident. They actually, at one point, they gave it to them because they were just so they respected the medical field. So the Wayne County Medical Society moved in. Basically, it was a hospice. So people did pass away in the house, as did David Whitney. He had a heart attack. He passed in the house, and so did his second wife. So went to the Wayne County Medical Society in the late 20s, 1929, I believe, the Visiting Nurse Association actually came in and set up offices in the building behind the Whitney. They came in there, and they pretty much everybody left until about, I want to say 1970. God, I can't think of the top of my head. I want to say it was in 79 that they actually left, when the next owner, Richard Kuhn, took over. And he actually bought the mansion, because they were going to tear down this historic building. He thought about, well, I'm going to buy this place, so they can save this home. It's just an absolutely beautiful, gorgeous mansion. So in 86, he opened up a restaurant, he spent a few million dollars in there trying to restore it. And then he eventually sold it to Bud Liebler, who's a ex Chrysler executive, for a couple of million dollars in 2007. And from then on, Bud actually spent, he spent a lot of money just actually in restoration, and also on the grounds. He did a lot of work out there internal in the house. So, and now he currently owns the place, and it's a restaurant. It's actually a fine dining restaurant. So, he's still there today.
How much of the home today is used for the restaurant? Can you dine in virtually any of the multitude of rooms in there? Obviously, there's a kitchen and such, but how expansive is the restaurant spread throughout the house?
How expensive is the restaurant?
No, expansive is the restaurant throughout the house. Where can you dine within the house? Is it just the ground floor? Is it all over the house?
Yeah, it's in the entire house. The first floor is your main dining area, and there's a lot of different rooms that the first floor had. They had the music room, they had the library room, because David Whitney, he loved to entertain, absolutely loved to entertain. It was just him, his children, actually, they were actually much older. They really didn't get a chance to live there because they were actually older adults when the house actually was finished, and some of them spent the time overseas. But he loved to entertain. He had a cooking staff. I can't give you exact number, but he had a big cooking staff, house staff to maintain the house. So the first floor had a lot of rooms. They have a lot of rooms now that are converted into dining areas. Second floor, same thing. A lot of dining rooms, dining areas. Even they have like a dessert parlor down there. The third floor is an area they call the Ghost Bar, and they converted that whole area with other rooms also to hang out. They have like piano music going on, so pretty much the whole house is used for entertainment.
So you can really get a good feel of what this house was like, the layout of it and everything, to this day.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the restaurant. That's very neat. Obviously this place was used for several other things, other businesses, other facilities, from the point of it being a residence to it becoming the current state of it being a restaurant. Take me back. What is the first reported haunting incident that occurred at the Whitney? Was it when it was a restaurant, or does it go back to when it was one of the other facilities?
Back then, it was a medical society, people did actually pass in the house. I do not have any information as far as back then when people started experiencing paranormal activity. Not until I think Bud took it over in 2007, when the staff would start saying things were happening in the house, and we started hearing about these stories. And it has probably been going on even before that, but I don't know, before 2007. But kitchen staff, waiting staff would say, glasses would be turned on a table that actually was already set. One gal I talked to, she was a waitress there. She said that she was setting up one room, and every every glass had a strawberry in the champagne. There was nobody in there yet when she got peppered in the back of her head by a strawberry. And one of the glass was missing a strawberry in the champagne. So stuff like that. You know, we've got people that have actually had conversations with a bathroom attendant that doesn't exist in the third floor ghost bar. Children playing on the second floor. They would hear the children's voices of kids on a Sunday morning before they even opened for brunch. The staff would hear children playing on the second floor. They would go in there. There's nobody in there. The stories go on and on and on. And even the stuff that we've experienced in there, stuff that happens right in front of us. And it's like, that was interesting. So, you know, being a paranormal investigator, we try to debunk it by, you know, was there a door loose, or does it automatically close on its own? But stuff like that's happening all the time. And it's like, some stuff we can probably debunk, other stuff we just kind of shake our head and say, that was interesting.
Do you think something was stirred up as the renovations continued in the life of the restaurant when he took it over? And you said he was doing a lot more renovations to it to restore it to its original beauty and such. Do you think that may have increased the activity at that point?
Yeah, yes. Actually, in the restaurant is located on Woodward Avenue in downtown Detroit. Actually, I think Woodward Avenue is the first road in the U.S. to actually have a paved road, being that this is the Motor City. There's actually construction that was going on Woodward Avenue. They were building a new Q-line rail. It's a rail from one part, north part of the town into downtown Detroit. So, you know, breaking up the streets out in front of their house, you know, it may have a sort of activity in there. And being that there's so many people now, that probably the spirits there are probably happy that there's people actually in the home now, that it's actually being used for something that for entertainment, because, you know, David Whitney, he just loved to entertain. So now you've got people coming in and out, and my guess, he probably loves that, and that's probably stirring up the activity from whoever's there. But then again, you know, you've got people that passed away too, so maybe they want to be part of that.
Tell me about your involvement with the Whitney and how you first heard about it. What was some of your first experiences that drew you into becoming involved with the Whitney?
Well, I had attended a Christmas party years before I even got involved into the paranormal. I had been there, and I found the place was, real beautiful. I hadn't been back for probably another 10 years, 15 years. We actually, I used to have spirits in the house I used to live in, which got me into this field. So I actually started investigating back in 1984 when I went down to New Orleans, the Myrtles Plantation in Louisiana. But we formed up a group in Salem, Massachusetts. And we were looking at the old hotels and whatnot, and we got back to the Detroit area and said, let's do this. Basically it's not a job. It's basically a hobby, and it's an expensive hobby. So we decided we're going to do this paranormal investigation stuff. We ended up going to Whitney because we heard about the ghost bar, but it was actually a trip on my bachelor party to the ghost bar that led us to start investigating the Whitney. We get to the ghost bar, and at that time it was not really busy at all. I think they were looking for some kind of something to jumpstart this mansion, this beautiful mansion. So we get there. Manager comes up, we're on the third floor, ghost bar, nobody in there. It's about 10 o'clock, and he says, hey guys, there's about 10 or 15 of us. Hey guys, the Whitney, the ghost bar is closed. Sorry about that. My buddy looks at him and says, hey, I've got $300, says you're open. So he turned around, he says, okay. So we lined up, light up drinks and whatnot. So we got to talk to the manager, and he said, hey guys, there's this, about a week later, he says, the Motion Picture Institute of Michigan, film students, they want to do a documentary on ghosts, on the Whitney. You guys interested? Yeah, we're interested. We want to do this. So it was maybe a few weeks later, we set up a date to come out there, probably around midnight. So we actually investigated from midnight till 6 in the morning, just basically filming this documentary, seeing what we can find out. We didn't catch anything. Because when you're this is the first thing I've learned about doing a film, and we've already done two episodes for the Travel Channel just recently. When you're under the direction of a film crew, you're told to do this, repeat this, repeat that. So you're not going to be aware of any paranormal activity that's happening. So you're just kind of just going through the motions. So after that was all said and done, we told Tony, he said, you know, if you guys really want to do something with this, you can make something happen as far as having paranormal dinners and whatnot. You know, do a little ghost investigation, serve a 5-course meal, and, bring people in. Because, you know, people love the paranormal. So we actually said, but we need to come in here. We need to do an actual investigation of this place. So we've done 8 overnight investigations there already. And, you know, ghosts, they don't work on command. You know, they don't make themselves aware, known until they're ready to. So we actually, during our 8 overnight investigations, we've got some pretty incredible activity. And we actually captured on audio. Nothing on video yet. We're still waiting for that. But a lot of EVPs, as you call it, you know, electronic voice phenomena. Mm-hmm. So that's how we got into that.
What was your impression of the place when he was telling you the ghost stories? You're finding out this place is haunted. Did you already kind of have a feeling? Did you already hear stories or rumors about the Whitney? What sort of knowledge did you have at that beginning point?
Only the stories. You know, it's... You know, you hear the story, and you really have to see for yourself. You've got to experience it for yourself. So I didn't really know. We walked in there really kind of like blindfolded. Didn't know really a whole lot, even the history. We didn't know a lot about the history of the place. Heard some of the stories. We didn't really even know where to look as far as what areas of the home or the carriage house that's in the back that's active. What is the most hot spot in the whole place? So it was just a matter of, you know, hitting every room, and, you know, you're doing your paranormal, your EVPs, and with your equipment, and trying to find the lucky spot. After all the years we've been doing this, we found that the carriage house in the back is the most active area as far as what's on the property. And the carriage house is part of the Whitney Mansion. Although we have caught some activity in the mansion, the carriage house is definitely the most active.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the carriage house seems to hold the most activity?
You know, people ask that all the time. Well, when we're doing our sessions up there, they'll say, you know, why is this place so active? You know, and we can't give a reason. You know, it's, yeah, obviously the Visiting Nurse Association moved in. It was a hospice. Why is there spirits actually in the carriage house? And I only say that because I would say 90%, 95% of the paranormal activity that we've captured is in the carriage house. And not only have we caught this on audio and even video, but we've had scores of people that actually are there witnessing as it happens. For the paranormal dinners, we've got about 20 to 30 people that had their 5-course meal. We give them a presentation, and then we go in the carriage house and we actually do a ghost investigation for about 45 minutes to see if we can capture something. And we've got responses back as far as the shave and the haircut knock, where you knock 5 times and it knocks twice back. We've had people witness that. We've actually had audible voice phenomena where they actually will talk to us out loud, and people actually hear that. They'll flip out. They'll say, "Did that just happen?" We say, "Yes, it does happen," and we actually caught that. So we actually were pretty lucky, and a few times too, where we've actually. Caught that, and people have witnessed it. They were like, "This is the coolest thing ever." You know, they've actually come back for other dinners and want to experience that again. So that's the reason why I say the carriage house is because the material that we've captured there is crazy.
When you're going about investigating the Whitney, what are you looking for specifically? Do you have an idea of who may be haunting? Is there specific people you're trying to reach out to when you're investigating?
Yes. Because of the EVPs that we've captured, we know there's a child there. We know there's an angry man, and there's a woman. And what the woman, we don't know, because up in the carriage house, there's a little tea set. I don't want to say a little tea set as in a child's tea set. It's actually a tea set for adults. The story goes that Grace Whitney, she used to love to go up there and have her tea as she looked out the windows at the running horses. She'd come back, go to the carriage house, have her tea and whatnot. They said that she would get upset if her tea set was not set for her when she came back from overseas. So we have a feeling that Grace could be up there still having tea to this day, because the woman, the audio that of the woman we caught, we actually were saying our goodbyes when we captured on audio a woman's voice saying, "Thank you for coming." Clear as day. So we know there's a woman, there's an angry man that actually told us to get out. Clear as day. We were up there, we had our camera set for about 6 days. We were breaking down our equipment, just me and the other founder for our team. And we captured the audio of a gentleman saying, "Get out." And there was a little child, to me it sounds like a boy. We brought up a book and we asked the child if we wanted us to read a book for the child. The child says, sure. I can't remember what it was, either yeah or sure. I don't remember that. So we know there's a child there also. So we actually try to, each time we're there, to try to get a name of the child or see if the child will actually say something more, because it's really, it's hard to actually even get an EVP. So we're trying to ask the right questions. Which questions are going to trigger a great response? And we're still trying to figure that out as far as how can we get them to talk to us more. Are they using our energy? Are they, do they want to play games? Because we've got a lot of trigger objects that we use in the carriage house to get some kind of response from them.
Is there anything that you're finding that seems to bring them out more, that does trigger them to become more active?
Great question. We know that the shave and the haircut knock has worked a lot for us. Not every time, but that routine gets probably the most response. But what we also found out is that that the spirits there, they don't want to respond to a question. They want to be a part of a conversation. So what we'll do is, even though we'll say, "Anybody up here, blah blah blah," we'll actually start talking amongst ourselves just as a conversation, see if they want to join in. Like we'll say, "Did you remember that? Do you remember last week, how cold the weather was?" And we'll get responses from the spirit actually chiming in. Is it cold or something to that effect? So we find that just a conversation between us, they like to be a part of that and not answer a direct question. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy it is, but it does happen.
Now, when you're getting these responses, are they EVPs, like you're picking it up on tape? Are they through a spirit box? How are you picking up the responses?
Digital recorder.
Okay.
But also, we're hearing them out loud, too.
Oh, really?
Actual disembodied voice.
Wow.
But we're capturing that also.
Sure.
On audio. So, yeah, both. We can hear it, and we'll have, most of the time, it's actually on digital recorder.
When you're capturing these voices, before I get to this other question, how many ghosts do you think are in or spirits reside at the property?
Wow, good question. I don't know. I don't have the answer. The carriage house, we know there's three. There could be more. The house itself, I actually, while investigating the first floor, this was probably maybe 2 a.m. We were using our equipment by the piano. There's a piano on every floor, and one of the piano players that's there, we invited him to come join us. We wanted him to play the piano, and then he'd play it for about 20-25 seconds, and then he would stop. During that moment, when he had stopped, I actually looked to my left, and what I saw was a dark shadow. It felt like he stepped right next to me. It was like a kind of a dark figure, like you would call like a shadow person. Mm-hmm. You could see out of the corner of your eye. And that is what I witnessed. This, I don't want to say a man, but it was somebody as tall as me, step to the side of me. And I looked over to my left because I thought and felt somebody walked next to me, and there was nobody there. So the mansion, yeah, you've got your activities, you've got your glasses falling off the bar, you'll see doors open up by themselves, stuff like that.
When
but it doesn't happen when you want it to, though, you know.
Sure, it's never on demand. When you had that experience with the shadow man that you experienced there, what did it feel like to you? We get a lot of stories, and there's a lot of interpretations about shadow people. Quite often, the most common thing that we get as a reaction is, oh, it's something negative, it's something dark. I don't necessarily subscribe to that every time. What's your take on it?
Negative? No, I don't feel it. I don't claim to be a sensitive or a medium, but I know what the feeling of because the house I grew up in, I know that feeling of somebody standing behind you, but it's like almost like a real negative energy. Yeah. It's like actually like pushing you out of the room. The figure that I witnessed or saw on the first floor, it didn't feel that way. It felt as if just somebody just stood right next to me. You could feel that person. So it was kind of like, look over, God, I thought somebody just walked up next to me, a corner of my eye. So it's more of a feeling like, you know, I thought it actually was a friend of mine.
Yeah,
you know,
like,
even though there was, you know, just us.
It just, that happened to be the way that it was manifesting itself. It was in that form. Sure.
Because it looked like, or felt like he wanted to be a part of what we were doing with the piano. Was it David Whitney? We don't know. But it felt like somebody wanted to be there with us witnessing this. The piano guy play.
Sure.
But that's what it felt like. It felt like somebody just stepped into my space.
And of course, the easy assumption would be, you know, the person who built the home, the person who lived in the home, that maybe is the person who's haunting the home. Obviously, there were so many people who came and went through those walls, you know, and died within those walls after it was a home. I mean, the possibilities, correct, of who it could be are obviously quite great. But obviously, the lore and the legend could easily go towards it being David Whitney or a member of the family.
Absolutely.
With all the activity that goes on there, do they feel to you, or as far as what you've been discovering, like they want to be there? Do they feel positive? Is there anything in there that feels like it may be negative or make you feel a little bit uncomfortable or very uncomfortable for that matter?
Not in the mansion itself. No, because I think it is a positive, like, I guess, you know, they say, like, in life as in death, where you, if you're positive in life, if you're a good person, good natured, you're going to be the same way in death. The mansion, no. The carriage house, I think there's a different story going on there.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Mark Ortiz about the ghosts of the Whitney restaurant. In part two, what is the dark energy that lingers in the carriage house at the Whitney restaurant in Detroit? What was the black mass that was blocking light in the window inside of the carriage house? What was Mark feeling when he led a group tour towards what he thought was a negative entity? How did the atmosphere change when the directors of the Whitney restaurant felt that it was okay to talk about the haunting of the Whitney? When a building is listed as haunted, could that increase the amount of activity that takes place there? What do the audible disembodied voices say about the Whitney restaurant? And who is a child that seems to haunt the Whitney in Detroit? We'll discuss all that and more in part two of our interview with Mark Ortiz. If you'd like to hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. It keeps our program on the air. And it's only $5 a month to become one. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks to sign up. You'll get access to part two of this interview and every single one of our interviews. Also, advanced episodes of the program months before they're released to the public. Sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.